Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening, we'll talk about the growing threat of terrorism in Africa. And with us tonight is my colleague, Patrick Deya. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Douglas, again.
And thank you. And joining us from Mombasa, Kenya, is Abdi Latif Egger. He's a scholar and a novelist, and he's joining us from Mombasa by phone. Good evening, Mr. Egger.
Good evening to all of you.
And welcome to the program once again.
Thank you.
Yes, as I said, gentlemen, we're talking about the growing threat of terrorism, right from the north to the west with the Boko Haram, to the east, some incidents in Kenya, in Uganda, DRC. Let me start here in studio. Patrick, general view of this threat, how serious is this threat, you think?
I think these threats are as serious as they can ever be because, again, I think it's very indicative of the political situation and people's feeling about their governments. A lot of these places where these things are flaring up, it's because people are not happy with their governments. They feel they're not being served well, and therefore they have to come up with a way of showing desperate people take desperate measures. Mm-hmm. So this terrorism is, I believe, it's very much driven by the dissatisfaction of people with their governments.
I see. Abdi, you now in Mombasa there, Kenya has had its fair share of these terrorist acts. Your general view of the threat posed to Kenya or generally on the continent?
Well, I think that, you know, first of all, the threat is not one way. There's the government reaction, which becomes itself, you know, can be construed by the citizens as terrorists. Meaning that the threat and its responses sometimes are very similar. I would also like to echo Patrick's thing is that in Mombasa and all these areas, there is a sense of marginalization. There is a historical problem, and there is a sort of othering of the Coastian. There's a religious element. So there are many things that have stood in the pot, and a lot of it has a relationship in terms of the legitimacy of government itself is at question, because after years and years of not addressing certain issues, particularly land issues, issues of education, issue of all of these things are pretty bad from 63 onwards.
Mm-hmm.
So post-colonial. So it's not something that sometimes the idea of the terror threat, although it occurs and all that, it also camouflages a lot of grievances, like Patrick says, that are stemming from other things, but are all sort of waylaid by also this acts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, being put in one place and category as terror. But there are many things and many things that bring all these factors to the top.
Yes, Abdi there raises a very crucial point. Patrick, we shall go back to some of the points he raised, like mm-hmm. the government's response to these acts of terrorism. But most people have argued actually terrorism is just the end result of a festering problem. So in your view, he mentioned some of the problems there, marginalizations, historical factors and all that. We see right from North Africa where the turmoil is, the causes are different. We see in West Africa, primarily it's these youth unemployed, easier to be attracted to these acts. So what do you think is the major attraction or cause to this type of terrorism?
First, I think maybe we could also do some favor to distinguish what, you know, the idea of terrorism. Mm. I think since the 9/11, the description or the perception of terrorism has totally taken a different, connotation. In Kenya, for example, you can say that the Al-Shabaab are terrorizing Kenya, because they're coming from another country into another country.
Which is also debatable
because Kenya is in Somali. Yeah. And why are they in Somali? Yeah. The reason they're in Somali is because one, tourist was killed. Mm. How many people have been killed before? You know, so what is the interest for Kenya to be in Somali? Is it purely to root out the Al-Shabaab? Or is it because it's something that a reactionary from the fact that a tourist was killed and therefore the effect that it might have on tourism in Kenya? Mm. Now, the acts of violence within countries, I think, is born specifically from the discontent and, you know, dysfunction of the government, you know, services to people. People become desperate. Mm. You see, that people who come into government with so much promise, and you can name them. Look at Mugabe, came into power with so much promise. Uganda, Museveni came in with the revolution at the time that Uganda was so much in abyss. And people were hopeful that through this revolution, things would change. You're looking, I was just reading an article recently about this movement now of Museveni needs to go. Mm-hmm. So within the country, I don't know whether you want to call it terrorism. And I think it becomes terrorism because, again, these are the people who are so-called terrorists. One thing that they don't do themselves as a favor is they terrorize people that really, you know, they go killing people that are really not in government. Mm-hmm. Therefore, they have a bad name. But the internal struggles of these people from discontent with government, I don't know whether you want to call that terrorism. When the colonialists were in our countries, you know, there were acts of violence in terms of for the purpose of driving them out and liberating themselves. Mm-hmm. So I don't know whether you want to blanket everything as terrorism other than people who are very desperate and the government is not listening.
Abidi, we can't, of course, discount the idea of terrorism, but do you think the designation of terrorism has been broadened too much that every act of violence now becomes terrorism?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, violence is violence, and whether one is considered by the state to be the right for the state to produce it, in other words, normative violence, you know, or the other violence which is considered to be terrorist. But if you look at the end result, these two are violences. You know, they're just violent. In other words, and in between all these, they usually it's generally in civilians are caught in the quagmire of these two, whether it is one from a military or one from from Al-Shabaab, for example. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, those are the definitions at the moment. What we're seeing in many places are differences in certain things, and now the concern is at the moment is that it's a blanket cover for everything that is going on. So, in other words, the state can afford to negate historical grievances, and not address, for example, land issues in Kenya, particularly Lamu, which has been insecure from 1963 because of the whatever you might have with banditry, crossing of border spillovers from Somalia, things like that. Have always been there. And then also settlement schemes from upcountry, numbering 10,000 and on and on, to a point where, there is a genuine feeling amongst I would like to call them the local people, which, for example, there's a term we call coastarian, which refers to the person of the coast. And as opposed to the guy who's from upcountry, meaning the government and everything centralized and now everything has been, they've gone into federalism and everything has been there. Mm-hmm. There's a devolution now in their county government and things like that. But there's still a long, drawn-out historical thing where there has not been redresses in these areas. And so now when you see places like Mpeketoni and all this, one who is not aware of all these grievances can only see what is the end result of that. It means that there's a lot more things going on there that needs to be addressed.
I see. Patrick, I take Abdi's point there, but you had already mentioned about the...
Let me just please add one more thing.
Sure.
And remember that, you know, Patrick, you have to include that there's the idea of AFRICOM, there's militarization, there's the idea of, you know, securing the Africa and you know, and the involvement of superpowers like the United States itself. So Museveni is not acting alone. Kenya is not acting alone. All these people also are not living in isolation.
I guess that's right. But the point I wanted to make is that there are people who have said, with the September 11th, with the involvement as the strong, powerful countries, as you mentioned, who are trying to fight terrorism, some leaders on the continent have taken advantage. Now everybody who doesn't do as they wish is branded terrorist.
Exactly. I mean, look at the Arab, you know, uprising in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Libya. At the time, it was looked at as liberation because, you know, for some, as you say, Abdi, there is a very strong connection between the interests of the West and how things are defined, whether it is terrorism or liberation. I think initially when sporadic attacks and whatnot, people discount why those sporadic attacks happen. But the moment it becomes a mass action like what happened in Libya and what happened in Egypt, then it becomes, yes, these countries need to be liberated from these dictators. So the idea that the West comes in and totally changes the dynamics of who a terrorist is must not be discounted. But the other effect that this has, describing what the leaders now, the African leaders or everywhere in the world are taking advantage of describing everybody as a terrorist, it's primarily because they fear that when this thing picks up and doesn't become sporadic and it becomes a countrywide thing, then their leadership is in jeopardy. And therefore, they, you know, the Kenya, the Uganda, you know, have to align themselves with the U.S. with an excuse of rooting out Al-Shabaab, which I'm not discounting the veracity of the heinous crimes that Al-Shabaab does. But when you have to, when you put it in perspective, what is the final result?
Abdi, this one mentioned the threat of Al-Shabaab in Kenya. There have been those who have been concerned and have pointed out that Al-Shabaab attacks have attracted victimization of whole ethnic groups like Kenyan Somalis. Do you see that there?
Oh, it happened, and there was something that is very famous now on, and people are actually still at that stadium. I think it was it's beyond now 100 days or something that there are people who are still incarcerated at that soccer stadium at Kasarani. And in around April 8th or 7th around there, they had sweeps and they pretty much locked up everyone that was there.
I see.
And there was a big outrage about it, and both Kenyans were very ill, some were for and some were against. So there was quite a debate about all these things. And, you know, it's almost, you seem like it's going through the post 9/11 phase where the media and everyone has, there's an inordinate amount of jingoism and what you can call, what we call in the States, patriotism. So that same period, and how the press itself was also very quiet for reasons of not trying to be accused. In other words, the whole idea of you're with us or against us became now the you know, the overwhelming reason. And then, of course, you know, there's also there has been that profiling, ethnic profiling of Somalis in Italy and other places. And yes, you know, that has happened, and people are still there in at Kisarani.
I see.
And the whole thing was to, you know, there was an explosion in Italy, and right after that, started arresting people. Now, this is not a new thing for refugees or Kenyan Somalis who live in the urban centers of Nairobi, for example, or other Kenyans for that matter, who are asked frequently for ID. So that whole colonial thing of whether they're putting people in camps, like Kisarani, which was done to the Mau Mau during the 50s by the colonialists, or they're asking for the identification, which was Kipande. And then, you know, there's a recurrence of that. So there's always direct access from the police to the people and asking the citizens, you know, where's your identification, which, you know, now can be construed in any way. In a lot of cases, it's a way to get a bribe.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, hold your thought, Patrick. Let's take a short break and we'll be back to continue our discussion of the threat of terrorism in Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
That AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing. So definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the threat of terrorism in Africa. Our panelists are my colleague Patrick Deya of VOA and Abdi Latif Ega, a Somali scholar and novelist, who is joining us from Mombasa tonight, and I'm your host, Douglas Simpuga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. Now, gentlemen, before that short break, Abdi raised a lot of issues and how this threat of terrorism in some places has caused what they call group punishment.
Right.
If somebody blows up something and he's of such an ethnic group, or religious or whatever, then the whole group becomes villains. Is that?
That is true. I mean, I was just in Kenya came back 2 weeks ago, and that is something that is still being talked about. Just because you're Somali. And you cannot distinguish between a Kenyan Somali and a Somali Somali.
Yes,
you really
right.
cannot. And so one wonders whether the idea of a blanket search without prior investigation and finding out who really are the culprits. I don't think it's fair to the Kenyan citizens who were Somali. Just because
go ahead.
I think it is not the onus on Kenyan Somali, which is also another historic problem where conceptually there seems to be a problem in that citizenship itself.
Right.
And then from the beginning, from the time of independence until now, Somalis are still trying to access that.
Abdi, it's because of what you talked about, the marginalization. I mean, the north part of Kenya, the northeastern part of Kenya, which is the predominant the Somali origin people, has been almost non-existent. I mean, to the point where there's a joke in Kenya that when the people, the Somalis or the people from northeastern Kenya come into Nairobi, then they've come to Kenya.
It's as if they're coming from elsewhere.
And so you find that this, you know, reactionary, the government is more reactionary than systematic looking and investigating case by case.
Mm-hmm.
When something happens, a street is blown up, what's the quickest place to go? Easily. Mm-hmm. And round off people. I don't think
And really that stems from another angle. In other words, Islia is considered, for example, even by the media, you know, there are exceptions, of course, in everything, but generally there's this ethnicity, and it's a land of a determinism of ethnicity,
right,
whether it is Luo or everybody else. You know, there is this penchant for it.
Mm-hmm.
Politics is driven by it. Everything is driven by it to some extent.
Right.
You know, a large extent, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're thinking Somali, everybody's thinking, Mogadishu, not Islii.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we have foreigners at our doorstep, not considering at any time one of the largest regions in Kenya is actually Somali.
Yes,
that's right.
See, this is a case of deferred citizenship, and it is compounded by, you cannot say the government is not the only person who is doing this, but this is compounded and reinforced by also the media outlets.
So,
you know, the people who are supposed to also enlighten the public have also abdicated their position because they had also engaged in this ethnicity.
So, or they have simply gone quiet and not, pointed out the atrocities that are being, meted on these people.
Yes.
You know.
So,
to be fair, some of them have spoken out. A lot of Kenyans have spoken up against it. You know, but there is a big chunk that is supporting that sort of patriotic thing. You know, we support you no matter what. That kind of thing. But the government has to be critiqued by the Fourth Estate. And, you know, the Fourth Estate, just like the United States during post 9/11, abdicated that position.
So there are those who say that the government's response to these acts of terrorism actually ends up creating more of these acts because of what both have just mentioned, the way they can't diagnose the real problem, they just act out of, and then a whole group terrorists. So that breeds even more of these acts. Do you agree?
I think, you know, just like anybody else, when the government comes and does this blanket, search and arrests and whatnot for people that are mostly innocent, you create a situation where now you're targeting us.
Mm.
So and even those that have not been caught become victim of future being caught. So what do you have to lose other than maybe join the movement? So yes, I think there's I don't want to say that it encourages people, but when you're being attacked, you want to have an upper hand and defend yourself.
I think, you know, beyond all of that is that, you know, this is nothing new. Again, we're looking at historical circumstances. There has been an extensive relation since the independence of military action and marginalization and police repression in the northern areas and in Italy. So it's nothing, you know, these acts of terror are just a new formation of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, meaning that response to terror itself. But there's always been that relationship, you know, and this is a continuum in that sense, if you want to look at it that way.
So
to say that this is an aberration in terms of rounding out people, it's not true. People have been rounded out there for a long time.
Yes,
on different occasions. It just made him been more intensified post the collapse.
I see.
Right.
So all said, there are acts of terrorism on the continent.
Yes.
So what, in your view, beginning with you, Patrick, and I'll go to Abdi in Mombasa, what should happen? What should be done to sort of control these acts of terrorism?
I think there's a need for a greater involvement of the government right in the communities.
Mm-hmm.
The government needs to have better surveillance systems, better investigative methods,
mm-hmm.
and I think there has to be an education of the community that what the net effect has is on you,
mm-hmm.
Because I think the communities know who these people are. And I don't think that they want these people amongst them.
Mm.
What makes them not maybe cooperate is when there's, everybody becomes victimized.
Mm-hmm.
But a big part of it also, anywhere in Africa, the Boko Haram,
mm.
and we're not discounting the fact that these people commit atrocious crimes against their own community, against the people of those countries. But I think the underlying factor is the government has to address the discontents that are there.
Mm-hmm.
Take, for example, Uganda. We're hearing about, you know what Museveni has done to opposition.
Mm-hmm.
Completely stifle opposition. Plant things to make the opposition ringleaders of these attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that I think a smart government should sit back and say, where are we going to with this?
Mm.
Does it have an end, or does it only just make it worse?
I see. Abdi, your last thought on that? What should be done?
Well, I think that heavy-handedness in terms of reactionary police, things as we have seen here in Mombasa and other places like Eastleigh, have been really counterproductive. And they will never solve problems that are historic. They need to be, and even if there's a move to go on, people have to feel that, there is a method of redress. Right now there's a new constitution, but I think there's still a feeling that, for example, for people in Mombasa, that their land disputes and things like that and marginalization, lack of education, is just going to be, they're going to be overwhelmed by the people from upcountry in general. So if this is not resolved, it's not going to change this idea of the government not being, fair or legitimate in these eyes. Like Patrick said before, there's a question of government legitimacy here, whether they can actually, be fair and to some extent, as far as possible, like other places have, equal access to certain things. These are all things that need to be addressed, but I think there has to be a balance in terms of critiquing it. And, within the idea of security, you cannot disenfranchise your citizens.
I see. Well, we are out of time, but we shall keep following up this idea of the growing threat of terrorism on the continent. And that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel. Thanks a lot, Patrick Deah, my colleague.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you to Abdi Latif Egga, a Somali independent scholar and novelist. Thanks very much, Abdi, for being on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. Our producer tonight has been Jackson Mufunganyi. We'll be back again next week for another edition of Reporters Roundtable. And in case you missed any part of this program, you can listen to it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Just click on Programs, scroll down to Reporters Roundtable, and you can listen to the whole program once again. You can also drop us a line. Our email address is reporters@voanews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in, and until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
This is our moment. We are speaking out to end malaria.
This is DJ Drogba. Malaria is preventable and treatable.
Sleep under an insecticide-treated mosquito net every night. go to a health center at the first sign of fever for testing and appropriate treatment.
Join me. United, we can beat malaria.